When Ryan's when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18 that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Wade Take the Mic.
And hello, welcome to Rewind Raw here at Post Wrestling. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting. Hello, Wei.
Hey, John. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I thought for a second you might have forgotten about tonight's Raw.
Why?
You were pushing it. I always have that thought.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
A minute or two late. There's always that thought. It's like, is this the week?
It ends. It's very easy to lose track of time, I guess, when you're watching Raw. Because it's just so much fun, you know, most of the time.
How have you found the two-hour experiment now that we've had a month of the changeover? Is it drastically different? Is it just one and the same to you? Is it much of a difference? I still do get a little excited knowing it's a two-hour show as opposed to three. Like, it is not, it's like the difference between, like, you know, I'm going for a nice workout versus, like, I'm doing a marathon and, like, this is going to be tough going.
Yeah, like it's still some level of like work, I guess. You know, this is work for us, but it's like it's work that you look forward to as opposed to maybe like sometimes dread. Is that accurate?
Most 3 hour shows I can't say I ever was excited about.
Yeah,
I guess I'll just say I
do appreciate the difference. I do notice it. Now, I also have, like, watching 3 hour Raws down to such a science that, like, it doesn't really even bother me that much anymore. So I guess I have a 2 hour Raw, like, watch in a really, really good science. Like, I get through this thing in, like, 90 minutes. It's great.
Has that adjusted for 2 hours? Do you start earlier than you usually did in the past?
I mean, I get through a 2 hour Raw in 90 minutes.
Okay. You know? I understand.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. As soon as we get this down pat, we're going to be changing. So the time is ticking.
And we might be adding even more hours to our schedule.
4 hour Raws, 5 hour Raws. Who knows? Maybe we'll just do an all nighter.
What's the latest that you may have heard about a 3 hour SmackDown being a possibility?
Only what's been kind of thrown out there. I think the key is that obviously for them to expand to another hour, I think comes with like a renegotiation. Like, I don't think WWE is just doing it at this rate that they have agreed to, but that certainly is not going to surprise me in the least that we could have both Raw and SmackDown bloated editions of these shows come the new year. But that's not official, but man, will that be a
what will you do? What will change with you?
I'm not doing 3 hour shows and then recording shows on Friday nights. I will state that outright. We will have to adjust our schedules because there is a breaking point for me. I will give up a Monday for that, but I'm not doing that twice a week.
Okay. All right. Just so people are aware.
I'm just laying it out.
We want to warn people ahead of time that if SmackDown goes to 3 hours, I guess our schedules will change.
I'm sorry. Anyway, you have a good weekend. You ready to attack the new week?
Yeah, I think so. I am. What did I do this weekend? I mean, every weekend's a good weekend, isn't it?
It wasn't a whole... yesterday it rained all day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I had a bunch of plants to do, and the rain kind of destroyed those plants. So I was inside.
There's always the next one.
The next day? Yeah, you're right. There's always a new day. Oh, next weekend. Yes, that's... That is true.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, folks, that's our weekend in 30 seconds.
I don't need to talk about it.
New people, Wei, have been ID'd, as the kids say, where we have got four new additions under the WWE ID program. We got Gall, a Israeli-born wrestler that has been working since 2018 out of the Elite Pro Wrestling Center, which is one of the ID schools as well. Regular with Beyond and other indies. Ice Williams, who was announced on Booker T's Reality of Wrestling show over the weekend. This guy's been wrestling for 6 years. Also a regular at Future Stars of Wrestling out of Las Vegas. Part of the tag team. You love this one, Wei. Lights, Camera, Faction.
Clever. Nice. I like it.
And then Marcus Mathers, who this guy is just a independent phenom, okay? Compare this, okay? Ice Williams, who's, a regular for these companies. He's been wrestling since 2018, I believe. He's got 65 matches. Marcus Mathers, since 2019, 533 matches this guy has had. Like, this guy has just, this guy works everywhere. You always see his name on, like, a regular GCW. He comes up here for C4. He's gone to Big Japan. This is a guy that is, gets himself booked, to say the least, and only 21 years of age. And then the other one they announced over the weekend, Sam Holloway, who was trained by Dominic Carini out of the AIW Academy in Cleveland, 2-year veteran. So I'm sure we're going to be getting more names over time, but they're quickly throwing out. And who knows how long some of these people have been under these deals. My understanding is that, there's been several that have had these deals for some time of they're not just instantly signing all these people.
And in the case of Holloway and Mathers, at least they actually filmed the video of William Regal giving them the news.
Yes. So
at least in their cases, I feel like I could buy that this was a genuine live reaction. But, very similar to, I think, the type of videos they've done in the past with, like, NXT call-ups and really just a form of promotion already for these talents. So, the machine is working already.
You know what they didn't show here? After this was done filming, Regal slipped them a jump drive and said, if anything were to happen to me, I want you to play this video 1 week after I disappear. just in case, Way.
Yeah.
Ring of Honor's final battle. Sean Ross Sapp and Andrew Zarian reporting that it looks like the Hammerstein Ballroom is going to host the annual ROH year-end show. And yes, this would be the first time Tony Khan has ever booked the Hammerstein Ballroom. And super sleuth John Cena has also noted that week they have not announced a taping location. So they haven't announced anything else. But I think if you're going to Hammerstein, it could make sense that you pair it up with some AEW shows that week. But it looks like ROH for sure. Final Battle's been at the Hammerstein many times over its existence. But yeah, a first time that, of course, this hosted, those famous ECW tapings back in 2000 and then became a go-to for
One Night Stand.
For One Night Stand, where they went. And this was, it's funny because WWE, up until last week, they had never booked the ECW arena. It was, Hammerstein that they used for those One Night Stand shows. And this is where ROH will become. They do not have a date yet announced, but probably a month away from that show happening.
Yeah, I mean, the Hammerstein is one of those, like, American locations, especially like with this sort of capacity, that just feels like an event to book in and of itself. And that, I guess you don't have so many of those really in even across the world. But the Hammerstein is one of them. We're just simply announcing a show. Look at GCW. Just simply announcing a show there feels like a big event. So, I certainly think that there's a part of this where obviously he's doing this because ROH has run these shows in the past, but AEW running the building feels like an even bigger story. So I hope he's not just using this for ROH nostalgia and he uses it, to make an AEW show feel special, especially at this capacity.
The GCW show you brought up. So tickets have been on sale for a few weeks for that January 19th return to Hammerstein. The last number WrestleTix had out was 620 tickets distributed. Now, this is a venue, I think they got about 2,000 in for that show in 2022. What does that tell you about the, obviously this show does not have the demand that inaugural event at Hammerstein did, where that became the hot event to go to because of GCW running such a significant building. They're going to have their work cut out for them over these next 2 months to fill this place.
I think it tells you a lot. I think it tells you maybe about the sort of temperature for people's appetite towards GCW or really like much indie wrestling. Again, really any wrestling outside of the WWE right now. We often talk about the effects of, a strong WWE on AEW. I mean, many promotions, even if an AEW already feels that, what's a GCW going to feel? What are other events, other promotions going to feel? So I think there's a part of that. I think there's a part of people wanting to see what the card is before they feel comfortable maybe giving their money or pledge to this again one more time. So they're going to have to announce something special, I think, to win some of those people back and to earn some of that trust back.
maybe some of those people watched that promo video and thought you and I would be like challenging Kevin Koo and Dominic Guarini. That'd scare people off.
I would not take that fight. No.
Well, it'll be an interesting night to watch. And I didn't even realize this until today while I'm mapping out our shows for January. That GCW show is the same night as the next major TNA pay-per-view. Like, they've got their TNA Plus specials, but that's an actual pay-per-view with Genesis. So, I mean, again, we're talking like two shows that I think are pretty niche audiences, but that is a head-to-head competition that night. On Wednesday, you know, this is the year of the six-part documentary series, Wei, and it looks like Max is countering. And with Netflix putting up their six-part series on Vince McMahon, Max is going to release their six-part series on Ted Turner. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be a really fascinating series. I don't think there's probably going to be any. At most, I think pro wrestling is going to be a blip in these six episodes. Just going over the episode descriptions, there's not one mention of wrestling. But this is the description from WBD. Trailblazing media mogul, sports team owner, America's Cup winner, philanthropist, father, maverick. The life and legacy of Ted Turner is told in his own words in this documentary series that explores Turner's tumultuous personal life, controversial public persona, and groundbreaking business ventures, including the launch of CNN and the creation of the Goodwill Games. The series also delves into his philanthropic efforts, environmental advocacy, and decorated sailing success. Featured interviews include Jane Fonda, John Malone, Christiane Amanpour, Alan Horn, his children, and more. Now, Ted Turner has, I believe he's turning 85 or 86 this week. It coincides with his birthday. Mm-hmm. And as it notes here, in his own words, and Ted Turner has not been in great health the last number of years. And just watching the trailer, there's no footage of Ted Turner speaking in his own words. I would be very surprised if he's going to be interviewed in his own piece. But nonetheless, it's six episodes. And I mean, this is someone that's just, he's a very significant media mogul. And I think people that this will be a very interesting series. As many people have noted, of this was the man that Vince McMahon just seemed to have such a hatred of for years after the fact. And how little it was often said that pro wrestling really occupied Ted Turner's day-to-day concerns. Like it was something, you know, he did credit pro wrestling for helping build the Superstation. But I think this will be very enlightening to see a six-part series, how much pro wrestling really fits into that. I don't expect much.
I don't either. Now, are there, so I have two questions. One, does Ted Turner's, what's his affiliation to this day to WBD, HBO?
Pretty much nothing. Right? Nothing. Like, he left there. He, after the merger, he was pretty much put into pretty much an honorary role. And then he still had a spot on their board of directors, which lasted until 2006. And like, he lost so much money from that merger. I mean, it really did a number on his finances. Not to say he was hurting for money, but nonetheless, it's, you know, but yeah, okay. By 2006, he was pretty much out of it. But this, I mean, this is going to get the full WBD treatment of this visionary.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, what sort of bias may you expect from an HBO Max produce or Max?
I mean, just reading the descriptions, this sounds like this is going to be a pretty glowing. I mean, I'm sure they will go into like this is a guy that said some like really like, you know, he was not the most politically correct individual, but I mean, okay, certainly not going to have the level of a scandal of some of these other figures that we have seen have to be tackled in comparison.
That's what I was going to ask you. What controversies may be attached to?
I mean, his ex-wife is part of this. Jane Fonda is interviewed in it, yeah. And I'm sure you're going to have tons of executives that worked with him. And listen, this was someone that, you know, from the Goodwill Games, like donated $1 billion to like a super environmentalist as well. Like this
was Captain Planet.
Captain Planet was kind of based off of this guy. So I mean, he's, you know, he's a very, very significant figure in American in terms of cable, of just getting his station onto satellite, and the launch of CNN at a time like in 1980, the idea of a 24-hour news station was thought to be like, what are you going to fill this with? And look at today's landscape where you have the, like, that is in overload as well. I think it's going to be a really interesting series. I don't know if it'll cross over to wrestling interest. Obviously, WBD not getting this out in time for his for the Observer Hall of Fame cut out last Friday, the deadline.
Do you think he gets in?
I think there's a decent chance he gets in. I think he gets some good amount of support every year in the non-wrestling category. I voted for him this year. So anyway, that's coming out on Wednesday. At the end of the month, November 30th, the night of Survivor Series, AEW is getting a 3-hour block on TNT, but there's going to be minimal crossover with Survivor Series because Collision is going to air at 4 in the afternoon from 4 till 6, and then Rampage will air from 7 till 8. Now, if you remember, WWE is promoting a 6 p.m. Eastern start time for Survivor Series, so Rampage will be rampaged for that hour. I don't think there is going to be too many people tuning in at 4 o'clock for Collision, but I can promise you it's better than had they been going against Survivor Series, which is going to be a big show. And this is typical of AEW, but you could watch 3 hours of AEW. You could have your picture in picture from 6 till 7 and then another 3 hours of Survivor Series. And then listen to us after. I mean, what a perfect day for the single bachelor.
Yes, there's simply just too much wrestling going on. If you're just a WWE fan, I think you'd even have trouble keeping up with that. So, it kind of tells you maybe the place for a show like Collision at this moment when it's stuck to a Saturday time slot, where there's really no good option. Why not go Saturday morning? Okay, how about that? Let's bring it back to, you know, you want to be nostalgic. Put it in the block with the cartoons. How about that?
Captain Planet.
Yes, right afterwards, yeah.
That would be a great lead-in. SmackDown on Friday night, it was number one on all of television in the 18 to 49 demographic, generating a 0.47, beating the NBA, but more importantly, Way, it beat college football on Fox.
Wow.
Take that and your press releases that you were sending out. So SmackDown winning the night in the demo and 1,536,000 viewers, which was up 8% from last week. Highest audience since October the 11th. They were also second in sports in Canada for the night behind the Leafs Red Wings game with 269,100 viewers and 130,400 in the 25 to 54 demo. Rampage last week posted its lowest numbers ever in history. This week got a 38% gain with 237,000 viewers and a 0.07. So we are at a point now where a 0.07 is that's not too bad. So that's the level where we are at. And what was interesting was they came back with the exact same main event that they had the prior week with Leo Rush and Commander, this time with Leo Rush evening the series. Men, it was like very little difference in the demo. They were up 6%, but women nearly doubled from last week. So that was a big difference. They were back this week. And there you have it. Also, there were a couple of announcements tonight regarding the next New Japan Strong Show, which is Strong Style Evolved on December the 15th. And coming out of Friday's show, they have now set up Mercedes Moné defending the Strong Women's Championship against Hazuki. Gabe Kidd defending the Strong Openweight Championship against Ryohei Oiwa, a tag title match with the Strong Openweight Tag Champions, the new champions, GYV, against the West Coast Wrecking Crew of Royce Isaacs and Jarrell Nelson, Shingo Takagi and Yota Tsuji against Konosuke Takeshita and Jack Perry, and we'll talk about the Takeshita-Takagi involvement, plus a four-way match with Clark Connors, Kushida, Kosei Fujita, and TJP, Leo Rush against Hechicero, and Mina Shirakawa against Johnny Robbie, and a kickoff match between Matt Vandergriff and Zane J, which they did shoot an angle for on Friday's show. But what I mentioned about Takeshita and Takagi, which was set up on Friday's event in Lowell, Massachusetts, is that Takeshita and Takagi, as of right now, if both hold on to their titles, will have a double title match at Wrestle Kingdom on January 4th with the AEW International title against the NEVER Openweight Championship, and the winner will defend the title the next night at Wrestle Dynasty against Tomohiro Ishii. So promising two incredible matches, and at minimum, probably one, if not both titles at stake here. Of course, there is the potential Takeshita could drop this to Ricochet. But regardless, you're getting Takeshita and Takagi and one of them against Ishii the next night. So they are loading this up quality-wise. I don't know how big this January 4th show will be from a ticket-selling perspective, but that's a hell of a match to add.
It could potentially be the match of the year on January 4th. Yeah, it's one of those, you know. Certainly, with a hardcore fan, I think that's already going to sell a lot of subscriptions. The fact that the winner faces Ishii at Wrestle Dynasty.
Are we going with Dynasty?
We are.
I'm here. I'll make it a pact right now. We will skip to Dynasty.
I listen to Chris Charlton, okay? Whatever he tells me to say, I will say. Wrestle Dynasty does kind of telegraph the fact that it'll likely be Takeshita facing Ishii rather than just, you know, a very New Japan match in Shingo Takagi versus Ishii. But I'm there for both of those matches. I don't really care if I know the result. I know I kind of just want to see what the intensity will look like.
Well, that is shaping up to be quite the cards for the 4th and 5th to kick the year off. And Tuesday night, NXT, they are back at the Performance Center. Trick Williams is going to appear on the show, and we have qualifying matches for the Iron Survivor Challenges at Deadline. The men's match qualifier is Wes Lee against Cedric Alexander, Cora Jade against Sol Ruka in the women's qualifier, then Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson against Julia and Stephanie Vaquer, Nikita Lyons versus Adriana Rizzo, and a North American Championship match, Kalani Jordan challenging Fallon Henley to try and win her title back.
It's pretty amazing that 4 of the 5 matches that have been announced are all women's matches, you know, and it doesn't feel odd, doesn't feel forced. It actually feels like quite the norm when you're talking about NXT. So, yeah.
It's a good point. Didn't even notice it at that point. It's NXT is like the most diverse show from just the makeup of, like, for all the discussion that came out of the Bad Blood press conference and Paul Levesque's answer. Like, NXT is your counter to a lot of that, where you are seeing like a lot of those criticisms are addressed at the NXT level, and it's kind of a comparison point to the main roster, where I think people see those differences.
And beyond the fact that, like, they have an incredibly talented crop of women that are down there, I wonder if there's any other directive to try to weight the roster more towards having like a lot of women on it, because this is the roster that you're going to see on the main roster in a few years' time. Is there a sort of an imbalance on the main roster that they're trying to solve at this moment by loading up NXT and developing so many, like, interesting, very good young women talent?
Well, once you have 4-hour Raws and 3-hour SmackDowns, that'll address problems.
Well, don't worry. We got a U.S. Women's Championship right now coming up.
And then Wednesday's Dynamite. They have announced about 100 things for this show in Bridgeport, Connecticut, including Adam Cole against Konosuke Takeshita in Cole's third match to get the match with MJF, Swerve Strickland against Leo Rush, FTR against Malakai Black and Brody King, with the winners getting into the four-way tag title match at Full Gear, Hangman Page and Christian Cage against Jay White and Juice Robinson, Roderick Strong against Lance Archer, which is Strong's third match.
Mm-hmm.
We will find out.
And that's a Falls Count Anywhere match?
Is that what it says here? Yeah, why not? Yeah, Falls Count Anywhere. Remember Roderick had that incredible Falls Count Anywhere with Jericho?
Right. Well, how is this fair, okay? Like, shouldn't this be like an even, you know, like set of three matches for each guy? Why does one guy get a Falls Count Anywhere match? Not to say the caliber of opponents has been equal at all. I mean, like, I'm sorry, Lance Archer, but you're no Konosuke Takeshita. You know, Adam Cole has had to go through several, like, much bigger names. But
maybe they're going to brawl all the way into MJF's home on his GoPro.
Okay, all right. Falls would count. Yeah, there, yeah.
Dr. Britt Baker against Penelope Ford. And then they have announced Jon Moxley takes over the Superstation. So on the same day that the man who launched the Superstation gets his 6-part bio series, Jon Moxley is going to overtake it. So won't be the first time Ted Turner had a takeover of his network. And then Jamie Hayter, Will Ospreay, and Bobby Lashley, they will all be speaking on this Dynamite. So that's a lot of stuff. If you notice, on Saturday's Collision, Anna Jay did this promo challenging Mariah May to a rubber match. And if she loses, she will never challenge Mariah May for the women's title again, and challenged her for this Wednesday. And they have now taken this promo and the online version. They have cut out the references to this Wednesday, and now it's a graphic for Collision. So they have they revamped this to make it for Saturday instead of Wednesday when it was originally promoted. Maybe they looked at this, they're like, oh, wait, we got a lot of stuff that we have announced here. There's like way too much.
Yeah, what do you think? So I know that this show in the past, like if it's done a bad number sometimes, or if like it hasn't attracted a big enough audience, many people often criticize the fact that they haven't announced anything. Is this making a difference? The fact that they've announced like what every segment essentially on this show?
I don't think it's necessary. Listen, there is a coldness to this that I don't think just you snap your fingers and you announce things. Like, this is a very enticing lineup. Like, I don't look at anything on this lineup and be like, oh God, this all looks really good. But I think it's a lot more than just announcing a lineup a week in or several days in advance. I don't think it hurts. I think this is better than, you know, Adam Cole's in action, and we're going to hear from Will Ospreay, and you're going in like tonight for tonight's Raw. You know, by 6 p.m., you knew the women's tag title match. You knew Bronson Reed was going to appear, and you knew Gunther was going to appear. That is all they advertised. Mm-hmm. But they're hot at the moment, and they don't have to be jumping over hoops to convince you to tune in. Like, that is what momentum is. And
that's what, you know, good writing, that's what good storylines, good, like interesting characters gets you. And like AEW has that, but it's inconsistent. And I mean, it's also different. AEW is also a promotion that I think kind of makes its name, or has made its name, more so off of like in-ring quality, and a card like what they've announced kind of promises that. But it's clear audiences maybe prefer the WWE method right now.
Are you interested in this two nights out, as we've just gone over this Dynamite?
This Dynamite?
Yeah.
Like I would say maybe like I'm on a 6.5 on it, you know, like I'm not somebody who just is that attracted by like great wrestling these days, especially like knowing, like without story heading into it, or without like massive stakes attached to it. Like, listen, Cole versus Takeshita should be really good. Swerve versus Rush should be really good. FTR versus House of Black should be really good. All these matches should be really good, but every match is really good these days. And when you have just a sea of really good matches, like there's the thing that makes me excited is ramifications for story. And
is it
some
of
that, but not enough.
Is it the ramifications, or are there, because I go up and down here, and to varying degrees, like Britt Baker and Penelope Ford, there isn't really much behind that other than a match. There's probably an angle coming out of it, but not going in. You know, they're Cole and Takeshita and Strong and Archer, like there are storyline ramifications for that match,
but not a very good story.
Well, that's what I'm asking, is like, not so much is there ramifications, it's like, what is your engagement level in what these stakes are, and how these matches have been set up.
Yeah.
And the idea of getting to a triple threat with MJF, is that
no, not really enough. Not because of the fact that they're building to a match with MJF. It's because I don't think the story's been very well told. It doesn't feel that real to me.
What if we found out that Roderick Strong is fighting for his wife, who has been embedded with poison, and he's fighting to the death,
and has suddenly forgotten how to speak English?
Yes. Shanghai necktie has been placed on a loved one.
Shanghai necktie? What's that?
Have you started Death Warrior yet?
Oh, I have not. No. Oh. I'm going to watch it in the morning before we record tomorrow.
Oh, Jesus. You're leaving it till the morning.
Yes, I am.
God bless your soul. That's coming up on Thursday. It is going to be Rewind Away, number 169. Brandon from New Jersey, when did we do our very first review, period? When did we start?
Like, ever?
Ever.
like, I want to say like 2007, 2008, maybe.
2007, 2008.
Okay.
Until now, I have generally reserved the 1% of the worst things I have ever watched for Heroes of Wrestling that I have sworn off that we will ever review again. This is knocking on the door of Heroes of Wrestling as one of the most destructive films to 90 minutes of my life that I will never get back. This is a horrid, horrid piece of cinema that no person should ever have to sit through and make any kind of sense out of. It is an atrocity that I am just going to get out of my system on this review this week, much like when you have like that pit in your stomach when you're sick and you just have to force yourself to vomit to get it out, is the hope that that will relieve your system. I'm going to hopefully relieve my system by reviewing this movie and then never thinking about Death Warrior again.
Oh my. Wow.
Postwrestlingcafe.com.
What a preview. All right. And if people want to watch this, where could they go?
I have no idea. I had to watch this on Daily Motion and battle with an ad blocker because Daily Motion is out of its goddamn mind. Like, there, it goes to ads every 2.5 minutes. I finally just had to download something new and God knows what to my system to avoid these ads. It was an atrocious watch. Don't watch this in advance. Just listen to us. This is what you will get. I might revoke Brandon's selections for eternity after this one.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. That's coming up this week. 4 shows on the Post Wrestling Cafe this week after we get through this atrocious movie featuring Quentin Jackson and the Dean of Mean, Keith Jardine. We will be back on Friday. Well, Way will be back on Friday with Neil Flanagan with Rewind to SmackDown. We've got Collision Course on Saturday, and then Sunday, Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson will be reviewing Historic Crossover 2 involving New Japan and Stardom. I will be doing a review free on the YouTube channel with Eric Marcotte after UFC 309 with John Jones and Stipe Miocic. Will one retire? Will both retire? We will find out with the return to Madison Square Garden. And then the week ends off with the NWA podcast Sunday night, maybe the most in-demand edition of the NWA podcast after. Much like we should just put up the graphic, Dr. Chris Ely to speak.
Dr. Chris Ely addresses his enemies. Why? This Sunday.
Why, Chris? Why? What happened?
Mm-hmm.
We'll hear from Chris and company this coming Sunday night. So check out all of that, postwrestling.com, for all the latest news. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you 2 editions of Rewind Away, starting off with a film review of Death Warrior. As described, the 2009 classic features 5 of the best mixed martial arts champions from around the world forced to play a deadly game. Plus, we tackle TNA's Turning Point from 2009. Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord will be covering the Historic Crossover 2 event, plus an Ask Away mailbag show, Rewind to SmackDown, and Collision Course. $6 a month gets you access to the Post Wrestling Cafe. And now we head off to the Van Andel Arena in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the site of a double taping tonight as they are taping next week's Raw as well.
What's the occasion? Why?
Grand Rapids. They deserve 2 shows.
Okay.
You know, Michigan was, they had to go through a very trying election last week. So you get 4 hours of Raw this week.
You don't know the reason.
They announced this a while ago. There's no like international tour or anything like that. So I don't know what the reason is, other than I guess the Raw crew, they get basically 2 weeks off now until they have to come back, because I don't think there's any house shows between now and then. Show starts off with Gunther coming out, and we confirm that his title defense against Damian Priest will be in Vancouver at the Survivor Series. Gunther, his address of Crown Jewel: I'm not living in the past. And he has a lot to say about Damian Priest. This might be Kamala Harris's next speech. I'm not living in the past.
He's not going back, Gunther.
He's not going back. Yes. No. Yes. He doesn't want to talk about the blue brand. He is here. It's all red. And out comes Damian Priest, who promptly enters the ring and lists off all of Gunther's insults before Gunther can get to them. Says, is that what you're going to say about me? You're going to call me street trash, or that I wasn't raised like you and that I had to claw my way into this company? Well, I wouldn't have lost this title if it wasn't for Finn Balor. turning on me. And since winning the title, you've started to doubt yourself and mentions the loss to Cody. And you know you can't beat me and challenges Gunther to take a swing at him. But Gunther can't do it. So we are doing Gunther in a crisis of self-doubt. He can't pull the trigger here. And then Kaiser walks out, defending Gunther and reminding Priest that Gunther already beat you. And he tells Priest to leave the ring, and he's continuing to run him down when Gunther cuts off Kaiser and lectures him, tells him to shut up. And then Priest drops Kaiser after he calls him street trash and challenges Gunther, but Gunther exits the ring. So Gunther is having confidence issues. I don't know how I feel about this.
He's having performance anxiety.
Performance anxiety, yes.
Interesting. Well, listen, they have to do something to sell the loss of Crown Jewel. You know, you're talking about an unbeatable monster like Gunther taking, what, his second clean loss in, what, several years as part of the main roster. So they do have to sell it somehow. And let's just kind of take the moment to recognize how tricky of a situation it you have to be doing a champion versus champion match where you've promised a clean finish and now having to book a championship match for the losing champion right afterwards. It's no easy task. It never has been anytime they've attempted one of these, especially with somebody like Gunther. So coming off of Crown Jewel, they did what they did. And unfortunately, they have certainly confirmed Gunther's championship as the secondary championship. All that said, the match, like, Gunther is still a very special performer that I will get excited by with any type of matchup that they announce. And I think for Priest, his role here is to just be a good babyface challenger. And I have to say, I actually enjoy Priest a lot more here this time around as challenger rather than as champion. He sounds like a bit of a better fit here because I think as champion, his promo ability, it was a step below mine and perhaps the audience's expectations, but as a challenger, he kind of sounds good enough. You know, in this case, I think there's still a lot of fire left from their first feud where, you know, Gunther called him street trash, of course. So I thought Priest conveyed the long-term anger pretty well here. I also think the Kaiser Gunther relationship is pretty interesting. It seems like they are teasing some form of tension as every relationship seems to be going through in the WWE these days.
No, it goes beyond WWE. It's like every company. It's just no one gets along.
It's, you know, it is the season, I guess, you know, for people to be mad at their friends. But it might also tease a possible face turn for Gunther, which I could see them flirting with. So I do wonder if this increases the chances of, okay, Gunther's already lost to Cody. Do we tell the story of Gunther being really down in the dumps and possibly losing to Priest, maybe with the help of a Kaiser? Is that possible here?
I really don't like the idea of flirting with a Gunther babyface turn. I think that is not the turn I would be making for Gunther. I think he has so many big programs as the dominant heel fixture. But they're doing something different. Like the go-to method would have been he loses to Cody and he comes out and he just runs rampant on Raw, just murdering people, and he's more vicious than ever. They're doing something totally different, and I think it's to create your doubt that he can keep this title with Damian Priest. Either way, and they very well could stretch this because let's remember, they have to come back 2 weeks later after Survivor Series with Saturday night's main event. I could very well see them, you know, do a screwy finish at this show where it's not going to be the main event and this gets extended 2 weeks for some blow off on NBC as well, because it's a very short turnaround. But there you have it. Maybe Gunther is going to have to seek professional help, talk through his problems.
Perhaps. Yeah. Maybe they make a pill for it.
Okay. Something to rehabilitate a loss in a champion versus champion match.
Sure. Yes.
Kathy Kelly is with Damage Control, and they congratulate Io Sky on becoming the number one contender, but tonight they have other business to attend to. They're in a six-woman tag, but wait a minute, there's only two of them. And in walked, and I swear to God, I thought it was like Misha Tate from 10 years ago walking in here. But it's Dakota Kai, who is back after 3 months out, and she is teaming with Damage Control. So the damage has been controlled, and they are slowly rehabilitating themselves to full strength.
Very slowly. I hope Asuka does come back soon. But yeah, nice to see Dakota Kai. it's kind of, I guess
has
it's
Dakota
kind of
Kai now like made they, like two comebacks since Asuka's been out?
Has she?
I'm trying to remember.
My memory is very foggy, but that doesn't sound so far fetched. But you know, Kairi and Io are, I think, sounding a lot more comfortable cutting English promos. If there's any silver lining to Dakota Kai's injury, it's that it's given them time to cut promos for themselves. So I'm hoping this sort of dynamic where the three of them all get to speak somehow is maintained.
For Veterans Day, they aired a video, and then later on, they showed some highlights of you know, the talent going to the tribute to the troops in various bases over the years. Kofi Kingston met R-Truth, thanked Truth for having their back a few weeks ago, but says, you know, for some reason, Woods didn't want us to get involved and pay the favor back. And there is Woods in the backdrop here, overhearing this, and walks in sporting a Baron Corbin t-shirt. And Woods interrupts, but then he is cut off by Pete Dunne, who apparently has taken issue with R-Truth online constantly referring to him as Butch behind his back. And this is the man's motivation, is calling me by my incorrect name. That's the source of his frustrations.
I mean, that's sort of been the basis of his last two feuds, you know? Like, it's sort of been his entire main roster career is just having a really awful name. You know, this is like the saga of Pete Dunne / Butch.
Well, that's, yeah. So he argues with Kofi.
Building a career off of this Butch name, really. Yes.
He argues with Kofi, and it sets up a match, and then Truth refers to him as Butch again.
Huh. Yes.
Because his name is Pete.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Pete Dunne, but I think if by this point this is all they have for him, I mean, you can blame the creative certainly for like the first portion of his career, but by this point, I feel like there's probably something going on where their assessment of the performer is that he's not really, we can't really do much else with him other than to like write stories around him based off of how awful his old name was. So, definitely think there's like some form of like charisma that remains like hidden within Pete Dunne / Butch that is just not translating into a main roster role. And I don't necessarily know if it will with whatever this is with R-Truth either.
I mean, I know they've been, you know, he's been handling like some producer work now, but I just can't. Pete Dunne, yeah. Especially like for the Speed matches and such. Huh. I just can't imagine like at 31, they'd be, you know, kind of, you know, looking at him as a like out of the ring contributor solely. But maybe he's going to undergo another name change and we'll get the renaissance of Peter Thomas England.
Okay, maybe.
How's your name Peter England and you change your name?
I guess Pete Dunne sounds kind of cooler.
Maybe they wouldn't have believed that was his real name.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay. Pure Fusion Collective against Damage Control. They note the history of Zoe Starks and Io Sky teaming in NXT as she tries to break Io Sky's neck. Sane hits a sliding lariat to Deville in the corner, and then Baszler pulls Sane to the floor and clotheslines her. We come back, and Sane tags Kai. So Kai attacks Baszler, hits her with a scorpion kick, face wash, and then the running boot misses, but she manages to take Deville off the apron and allows Baszler to apply a half crab on the previously injured knee. Sky is in for the save, and then we get everyone laid out. Baszler tries for the Kirifuda, but Sky tags herself in, and she is caught in the Kirifuda on the apron, but then Kai breaks it with the running boot, setting up over the moonsault, and Sky pins Baszler in 9.5 minutes.
I thought this was a good match. You know, this one received a much better reaction than I think women's tag matches typically do on the show. Crowd seemed familiar and very reactive to Dakota Kai and her injury story heading into this match as she was attempting to get revenge on Shayna Baszler. I thought Kai looked quite good here and aggressive given her storyline, given her vengeance, and those running boots I think looked really awesome. So with Io pinning Shayna, obviously you have to promote Io ahead of the title match, but it still leaves room for Shayna versus Kai, the singles match, which, I mean, I could see them doing for TV.
The Usos are with Sami Zayn backstage, and Zayn and Jimmy are trying to get along with Jay as the peacemaker for them, and he compliments Jimmy on his chain, but Jimmy can't muster up any kind of compliment for Sami's attire. like you dress one step above Mark Davis. That's probably what he was thinking. And they note that we need a fifth man for a war game. So we are getting 5-on-5 at Survivor Series. Zane says, I know someone. Jay, I'll text you later. It's like, dude, we're in the same arena. You could just find
me. It's a big building.
I guess so. The Van Andel Arena.
Yeah.
Wade says, if he's thinking about Kevin Owens, that's a bad idea. So, I mean, he's just calling out the person that literally makes no sense for this story. But that would not be the person on Sami Zayn's mind.
Well, where are we at, like, with the Sami and KO relationship? They haven't turned on each other yet. KO just moved to SmackDown. They haven't really had any sort of disagreement, have they?
No, they had an amicable...
they had a backstage interaction. Remember, like, when Sami was about to compete for a championship or the IC title or something?
Yes.
So last we saw of them on screen, they are still on good terms. So it would make sense that Sami would ask Kevin Owens, with the exception of how much Kevin Owens hates the Bloodline. But
put that aside, yeah.
Those are the fireworks we want to see, right? So, you know, saying
the,
something
the man
like,
just crippled Randy Orton for doing the exact same thing.
So the fact that it's 5-on-5, I think will clearly indicate that those two remaining members are likely to be Cody and KO. I think it's for them to make such a big deal out of it. I don't think it could be like a Hikaleo or like an unknown, you know, like a whoever else, you know, that's a Bloodline member that we don't know.
Rikishi.
Oh, well, that's always a possibility. Yeah. But, the fact that they have to now kind of tell this story with potentially Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes joining this War Games match might give us some suggestion about why they had to accelerate the Sami storyline and reunion with the Bloodline so quickly on Friday.
Yeah, which is interesting because sometimes they run into these issues when you do the double tapings is that they have to book tonight's second Raw with the understanding of what they're doing on Friday's SmackDown this week as well. Like, not impossible, but you do have to be thinking at least a week ahead. Kofi Kingston is out with Xavier Woods to take on Peter England. And Dunn drop kicks him to the floor. Dunn is drop kicked to the floor and takes a Tope Con Hero. Dunn takes over after the break. He's dropping him with elbows. And Kofi comes back, splashes him on the back. And then the Trouble in Paradise hits out of nowhere, sending Dunn to the floor. And Xavier cheap shots Dunn. And Kingston takes issue with this, argues with Woods, who tells Kofi, just win the match. And Kofi is stating, I told you not to get involved. And with this argument, Dunn capitalizes, nailing Kofi with a kick as he reenters the ring and is hit with the bitter end. And how bitter it was. 9 minutes, 4 seconds as Dunn gets a very rare victory in life. And then Woods just has his back towards the ring. He's frustrated and tells Kofi, I told you so. And Kingston shoves him away. They yell at each other as Wade and Tessitore suggest maybe they won't even make it to their anniversary at the end of the month.
Maybe they don't. Do we have an exact date for that anniversary?
They've just said at the end of the month. I don't think, and they've announced that they'll do a whole Raw to celebrate it, but they haven't said which week. But
so I would assume that would be the 25th, because if this is a double taping, they're probably not doing it for the double taping, then it only leaves the 25th.
Right.
So,
right.
All right, the last
show before Survivor Series.
So we're 2 weeks away from what should be a big day for the New Day, good or bad, you know? So the countdown is on 2 weeks from now. I thought it was a fine, decent match, but mainly I was kind of here for the storytelling elements. I think they continue to find fresh and innovative ways to showcase this tension between Kofi and Woods and progress this breakup relatively slowly. You know, again, we still have 2 weeks to go, but it still feels like it's enough material to tell us that it's moving towards its destination. So just one of several tag teams that are on course to break up at the moment in the WWE.
Yeah, this story has definitely taken its time. It's not rushing anything. But
well,
they're trying to
hit this 10-year anniversary, like, John.
They're like, we could just bump up this anniversary by 6 weeks. Judgment Day is in the back, and Balor gets upset for Dominic not winning last week's four-way, and therefore Priest getting a title shot. And Dom says, where were you last week? Dominic then points out, I beat Damian Priest, and I got closer to the title than you have in a long time. So Balor and Dominic are increasing their problems with one another. Uh-oh. Mm-mm. Two teammates on different pages. So The others get involved. They calm them down. And then Balor suggests, why don't you and Carlito step up for us and face the War Raiders next week? And Dominic's like, okay, sure. We'll face the War Raiders next week. So to soften them up for you guys, it's like, what a segment this was. So we're getting that next week as well. So this is the benefit of you book a week ahead. You know exactly what the War Raiders are doing next week as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, like we are kidding, but it also tends to make these groups interesting when there's some inner conflict and some tension between the members. Right. And this is the first time we've seen it between Dom and Balor. And I kind of really enjoyed Dom's performance here a lot. Like, he comes across very much like a bratty teenage son talking back at his dad, except in this case, his dad is Finn Balor.
Man has that dynamic down pretty cold at this point. He knows his role. Just, can I call you dad? Can I call you a bastard?
Yeah. I think he's
a deadbeat.
The guy knows and plays his character really well.
Former UFC light heavyweight champion Jamahal Hill is shown in the crowd. So we got back to back. We're just going back from Alex Pereira on Friday to Jamahal Hill. Several weeks, we're going to have Randy Couture showing up here.
Is he on good terms with the
UFC? No, he's not on good terms. Okay. So I watched the countdown show for UFC 309. And okay. So it's John Jones who is coming back to fight Stipe Miocic this Saturday. Stipe has not fought since March of 2021 when he got blitzed by Francis Ngannou. But they can't promote Francis Ngannou because he's no longer in the company. Mm. So, dude, you almost have to watch this way that they cover it, where it's Stipe walking towards the middle of the octagon, and the image they show, you can't, like, the bar covers Francis's face. Wow. And they walk towards each other.
What bar? What are you talking about?
Like the perimeter of the octagon is covering Francis's face, so it's obstructed, and you can't actually see his face. That's him.
That's very.
It
funny.
Fades to black.
He's like Wilson on Home Improvement.
It kind of is, and then it fades to black, and you just have the voiceover of Daniel Cormier. Oh no! And then we cut to like modern day Stipe, and it's like, it's not like who he lost the title to. It's not that he lost. It's just like, it's as small a reference as we could possibly make just to explain Stipe is not the champion anymore and is now challenging John for the title. But it was like, this is the most petty editing I have ever seen. It was unbelievable.
That's so silly.
And it's the comments under the YouTube video are just hysterical because it's all about this and how petty they are.
The poor editors who had to dig through the footage to find those shots.
It was hilarious. I laughed just watching this. Bronson Reed comes out to start the second hour and calls Rollins a hell of a competitor after winning at Crown Jewel. But I'm not a competitor. I'm a monster. And he took out Seth, Damian Priest, and Sheamus last week, all of whom seem to be just fine this week, all three of them. And he's going to put Rollins down for good and challenges Seth to come out for revenge. But instead of Seth, out came 2005 Matt Hardy in his green baggy jeans and leather. And Seth storms the ring, and we got a big brawl. 5,000 security men go down, and it ends with Bronson hitting a tope suicida, missing Seth and taking out security. And finally, Adam Pearce is in to scream and keep them apart. And next week, it will be a rematch between Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed to end it.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if it's ending. I mean, it could be a straight win, but I really do see them building to a non-finish to get to a pay-per-view or Saturday night's main event or something. I think this is a rematch that seems perfect for a stipulation. So we could get Reed winning perhaps next week and then building to the rubber match to really close it. But this is one where I see I don't think it ends with next week's match. I guess we'll find out through spoilers.
I mean, people listening to this can probably already read the outcome, so I'm not going to guess because I have not read them yet. But anyway, that was set up. Zayn walks in to speak with Seth. and explains how you're the only guy. It's like, wait a minute, okay? That's my one issue with this Seth thing, was like, you're the only person we could think of. Like, Cody has literally buried the hatchet with Roman, teamed with him at Bad Blood, is best buddies with Jay, is best buddies with Sammy.
Okay, he probably means on Raw, okay?
Why does it need to be on Raw? Sammy's not on Raw. Is he? He's on SmackDown. What does it matter?
Sammy's a Raw guy.
Well, why do they need a Raw guy?
Because these are the only people that are backstage right now.
He said, between Raw and SmackDown, you're the only guy. Those were his words.
Oh, he said between Raw and SmackDown?
Okay. He said, on Raw and SmackDown, there's only one guy. Like, right. This makes no sense. So he proposes this. He understands. I understand you have a history with Roman Reigns, and I was in the same boat. But that bond never goes away, and I know you two are still brothers. There's no one else. Help me, Obi-Wan. You're the only one. And he thinks, Seth, you're our fifth man. And Seth says, I think you're out of your damn mind. I did everything to get that title off that tyrant, and I'm shocked that anyone would stand next to him, especially you, Sammy. And you're being used, and Rollins rejects the offer.
Hey, I like this, okay? I liked Rollins especially, and how he was able to really play with that pause where you almost sensed he was considering it before he completely shut down Sammy. I think it keeps Rollins' integrity strong, and there's always that match down the line between Rollins and Reigns whenever they get to it. But I thought he delivered it really well, and it introduces an element of doubt in Sammy. You know, now Sammy has to wonder, is he being taken advantage of here by Roman Reigns? So I love hearing all of these like supplementary reactions to Bloodline family drama. You know, it feels like it's a company crossover type of event, or at least everybody seems to be talking about it in ways that I kind of wish like this Death Rider takeover received similar levels of attention, or even like the Elite, you know, EVP takeover that they were attempting received a similar level of attention.
Damian Priest against Ludwig Kaiser, kind of just a Damian Priest rehab match after losing to Dominic. His shoulder was sent into the post, but then he comes back, broken arrow. He absorbs a PK, and then the straps come down after a rebound clothesline and hits the South of Heaven, and he wins in 7 minutes, 43 seconds, and also avoided the dreaded Kaiser roll in this match.
Yeah.
Which just always sounds like a sandwich.
When did he lose to Dominic at the,
it's like 2 weeks ago,
And then last week he won the four-way.
No, he won the four-way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, crowd reacted well for it, you know, just putting a spotlight on Kreese by having him beat the understudy. I really do think Kaiser
has understudy.
Well, pretty much. Right. Like
you're just fueling this eventual breakup.
Well, I that's what I'm saying. I think Kaiser has like actually greatly evolved beyond this role. And it's part of the reason why I think
more than Giovanni Vinci,
Who we have not heard from since losing to Apollo Crews in very quick fashion. Really, yeah. Apollo Crews really kind of booked himself out of a TV time by winning those matches so quickly.
Yeah.
If he made the match last a bit longer, he might be Carmelo Hayes and Andrade right now. But they're having dark matches and they're having speed matches, okay? That's where you could see Giovanni Vinci right now. But I do think they are transitioning Kaiser out from this Gunther role, where I think he's clearly capable of far more than just being a second.
Gunther walks out after the match. Just had a brief stare down with Damian Priest. Then they promoted Dwayne Johnson. He's got a big week. He's on the cover of GQ magazine. Red One is in theaters this Friday, and he'll be on Jimmy Fallon tonight. And hopefully he was on time for these commitments.
Sorry, what's that?
Did you read any of the highlights of this GQ interview he did today? So remember a few months ago, The Wrap did that story on him about being, you know, hours late for
and
production
like
days.
Peeing in bottles.
Peeing in
stuff.
Bottles. Yeah. So in the interview, he said, yeah, I am late sometimes. And then they got Chris Evans to kind of just play, basically run cover here for Dwayne Johnson, and the explanation was like, yeah, he's late, but we all know he's going to be late, so it's expected that he's going to be late. It's everyone's cool with it. I'm like, Well, is that being late, or is it we're all sitting around for hours waiting for this guy? And Dwayne kind of just admits to it that he is late, and there's probably a lot of people waiting on this guy. And then he says, and the peeing in the bottles thing, yeah, that happens. I was like, but yeah. He does deny that it added whatever that figure was of like the production cost going up. He called that bananas. That's a ludicrous figure. But I did not read the whole story. But I mean, anyway, it's I don't know. It didn't sound like the most endearing portrait of Dwayne Johnson on set, even though it seems like gets along with everybody. But it's a lot of hurry up and wait when you're with Dwayne.
Right. Right.
Okay. But hey. He's on Jimmy Fallon tonight. Then in the first time I can recall, they showed highlights from Speed with Sheamus and Braun Breaker, I guess, wrestling to a 3-minute draw.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they had a post-match pull apart, which was probably as long as the match. And Kathy Kelly is with Braun Breaker. And he said, you know, I've been looking to expand my trophy case and I could have won the Speed tournament if it wasn't for Sheamus. Oh man, just stolen out of your clutches. And then in comes Sheamus, who's like, screw this Speed tournament. Can I have a title shot? And Braun's like, yeah, how about next week? Sheamus is like, ah, you're arrogant. Reminds me of me. Braun says, I'm going to kick your old ass. Sheamus says, all right, kid. I thought this was the best promotion for a match. Ah, fuck you, old guy. All right, kid.
Let me just say on behalf of everybody listening, Raw is so much better to watch through John Pollock telling us about it. It's so much more entertaining than just whatever.
What are you talking about?
I thought this was just a very normal segment. In fact, like, I thought it was good little build to a quick TV match. Okay, I was happy to see them finally acknowledge Speed. The Sheamus's thing, you know, like his entire what is it? What do you call this? His story is that he's never won the IC Championship. So I thought this was just, I don't know, good logical segment. But through John Pollock, I mean, this was far more entertaining and far far more hilarious.
Wait, there is an era about me in this 2-hour era. I have a great time by myself watching these Raws. I'm laughing. I'm enjoying. I'm quoting these guys verbatim. And then Jimmy Uso walks up at the end to speak with Braun Breaker privately. Who's going to be the fifth man?
Braun Breaker is the only hope, clearly.
Yeah, depends if there's a trophy at stake.
Yeah, my dad never beat your dad, but...
Oh, yeah. We've got this whole stuff. The backdrop here.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Okay.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
The Miz has returned. He is no longer kidnapped. He was let free. And the final testament asks, what happened? And he says, the Miz says, I'm going to Adam Pearce to ask for a leave of absence. So this is one of those deals where this is all a plot that all of these people are in on together. So this is not an invisible camera. They know this is being broadcast to the world and the Wyatts might be watching this on their collective laptop.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You have to go in with that understanding here. Mm-hmm. So Cross says, you're not done because you have no information for us about the whereabouts of the Wyatts. This is bigger than you. Or Miz says, this is bigger than us. This is about my family. I promise the Wyatts I'm a changed man. I'm a better man now. We've all moved on, and Karrion, you need to move on as well. But no, goddammit. Karrion Kross is here to gain revenge for Paul Ellering, who I'm going to proceed in canon that he was murdered by the Wyatts.
Well, he's dead. Yeah.
He's been killed.
He died. Yeah.
And AOP proceed to drag Miz because, as you recall, Karrion threatened to break his legs. So we are going to watch a man be have his legs severed here in the ring. Somehow, in dragging this guy to the ring, They smashed open his eye, which is going to look awesome tomorrow. Pardon the pun. For the Miz, he was this just looked like it sucked. He was did this happen?
I'm thinking it was when they dragged him out into the stage and actually kind of threw him in the opening ramp staging area. So I mean, it kind of worked out for the scene, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Cross accuses him of lying, and his story doesn't add up. And then the lights go out and the Wyatts appear. So look at that. Their whereabouts have been detected. But the Miz turns on the Wyatts by attacking Rowan with a chair as the Final Testament beat down the Wyatts, including a super collider, a skull-crushing finale to Rowan on the chair. And the Wyatts are left laying, as Final Testament are leaving, Karrion Kross watches as Uncle Howdy starts laughing. And this is the image we have been waiting for all these months. Karrion Kross and the Miz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Together.
Sure. Yeah. I thought it was fine. I think it was fine in that it was a satisfying conclusion to what they've been building up. Okay. It was also the first time we've seen the Wyatts like really sell for anybody. The first time by far that we've seen the Final Testament look competent doing anything. So that's a win. I mean, I think overall, Karrion Kross has been doing a good job in this particular segment of his career. You know, I think he's found a tone for his character where he feels like he's sort of like a mean and serious guy, but also kind of funny at the same time.
I want digital exclusive Karrion Kross. I think that's his best avenue. I think we're routinely entertained by his digital stuff that doesn't translate on screen.
Oh, I think we're getting that. He's found a great tone for those online exclusive videos. You know, like the one we watched of
him. Oh, the one you showed me after that one show we did, where after the kidnapping hysterical.
He's making a drawing, and then Scarlett comes over and says, "Like, hey,
this has been kidnapped.
Yeah,
what do you think is going to happen? Like, oh, he's dead."
The timing was excellent. So, like, I would suggest he's kind of like, I don't know, Saturday morning cartoon type of villain, but like in the best way. And I think the Miz is a sort of perfect supplement to him to really get that sort of stuff out. Now, are the Wyatts really the best group to try to get that out of him? I mean, we'll see. I don't know. But there's promise here, and there's at least improvement with the Final Testament and certainly with Karrion Kross.
There is one follow-up for Miz that is essential for next week. Why did I do this? Dexter Loomis, you son of a bitch. Do you remember stalking my family? Showing up at my home where my children were?
Right.
I didn't forget that. I don't care if that was the Vince era or not.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
That was awful television, and you scarred my children forever. And now I'm going to drag you down into the worst.
How does Bo Dallas have any sort of, like, you know, standing on any sort of grudge when he's employing Dexter Loomis as part of this group?
No, okay, there's no defense for that.
What
one.
A hypocrite.
I side with Miz. Kathy Kelly catches up with Seth Rollins. He's looking for his T-shirt. And she asks, how are you going to keep Bronson Reed down this time? I'm bringing guns, Kathy. That's all I can say. But off in the distance, he spots Solo Sikoa and the Bloodline, who are just in town just to take in Raw. It's a double taping tonight. And Solo offers Seth a spot in the War Games match on their team, and they can take out Roman Reigns together. And Seth responds that the next time I'm in the ring with Roman Reigns, I'm going to stomp his head in. I will never team with Roman Reigns ever again. But I'm never going to team with a wannabe Roman Reigns. And he just stares at Jacob Fatu, and then, just for added resistance, smashes the door as Tongaloa was dozing at the wheel. And he just walks off into the night, goes Batman.
Without a shirt?
No, this guy's wandering downtown Grand Rapids in this outfit, minus a shirt, in the middle of November. Odd cat.
I love this. I thought Seth looked so cool in this episode, you know? Like he like Seth when he's I guess pissed off, not doing the whole like he's really at his best when he's like, you know, when you're presenting him with the idea of teaming with Roman Reigns. That's the Seth Rollins I want every single week, okay? Because he just like he looks so angry. He's so angry that he won't even shout. He's so angry that he's just silent that you would even suggest the idea of him interacting with Roman Reigns at all, much less a wannabe Roman Reigns like Solo Sikoa, which I thought was a great line here.
So we had about 10 minutes left for the main event, Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill against Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez for the tag titles. Raquel distracts from the apron, allowing Liv to yank Belair by the braid off, and then Jade goes after Raquel on the floor, and then we had this one near miscommunication where Liv ducks a clothesline on the floor, and Belair nearly knocks into Jade. I thought it was like a subtle spot, but one that I think they're just, it's just the slow build, and it's
the
could
season.
Could there be dissension among teammates?
It's the season, man. If you're in a tag team, watch out. Watch out for your partner.
We come back from break, and Cargill and Liv are tagged in, and Rodriguez Rodriguez gets slammed by Jade, and then Liv chop blocks Jade, and we get a spinning version of Jaded onto Liv, but Raquel makes the save, and then we get double boots by Jade and Raquel. They did the Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn spot, but I think both of these were on purpose. And then, out of nowhere, Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton run down. Jax pulls Jade to the floor and drops her onto the apron with a Samoan drop. Stratton is distracting the ref. And then it's Raquel with the elbow off the turnbuckle. Belair is in to save. Then Naomi shows up. And then we get Liv coming off the buckle into a kick by Jade that leads to the kiss of death. And Belair pins Liv Morgan in 7 minutes and 28 seconds. So by the end of this, you had Jax going after Belair, Jade, and Naomi, but they ended up fighting them all off. And to end the show, you had Belair, Jade, Naomi, and who was the fourth one here? You had Io Sky, who was also out here, and they stand tall, and this feels like your women's War Games direction.
Yeah. I thought the match was good. I continue to be impressed by Jade. I mean, at this point, I think her improvements are what I would consider to be impossible to deny. She looks very confident, certainly in a tech team setting, but now she's even getting fancy, you know? She's introducing new moves like that inverted rack bomb. The sidekicks, I think, are looking effective and well-timed and fast, so she's doing really well. I thought Naomi's run-in received a great reaction. Io's kind of, you know, came out of nowhere, but I mean, she is facing Liv Morgan, so I think they were able to like give us enough justification for weaving that in. And in the end, you're talking about possibly the four, or at least four of the most, you know, popular baby faces on the entire roster right now. So that alone might be enough to satisfy a lot of people for a War Games team. And I'm not going to give the spoiler, but this will be a 5-on-5.
Yeah. So we've got Nia, who feuded with Liv going into Crown Jewel. They've put those problems behind them. And then we've got Liv to defend the title against Io. We also had Belair pin Liv in this scenario. So we've got multiple matches we are building out of this whole thing.
But Belair, I don't know if she's eligible for Liv's championship.
Well,
not that that matters, but I don't know if they'll recognize that. They could, but I don't know.
Well, they didn't pin Raquel. They could have pinned Raquel, but maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. But, War Games is shaping up. I think we'll get official announcement next week.
If we have taped the show. So, yeah, mm-hmm. We won't go through spoilers, but there you go. That's next week's show. Let us move on, and if you want to send in your super chats, you can do so, and we will also go to the forum where we have feedback.
Okay, let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
We start off with Manny from Pacoima. So WWE is going with the old I won't join your team cut to the enemy trying to recruit them now and possibly interfering in their match after also being rejected, thus forcing the superstar to join the team he said no to first storyline. If this is the tease for Seth to join and the big moment at War Games is when Roman and Seth finally come together, do you think it overshadows the Jay story even more? I originally thought Jay was going to go into War Games very hesitant, and the moment of that match would be Jay embracing his family once again, but this entire story has felt rushed. And also, if Seth is the fifth man, which I'm strongly starting to think he could be, where does that leave Cody? Bunch of questions in here. I will state that if you look at all of this, like, you have from Crown Jewel to Survivor Series, you have done the reunion of the Usos getting back together with Roman, with Sammy reuniting with the Bloodline, and then the tease of a Seth Rollins reunion. That's a lot of coming together in a very short amount of time, and I do feel Sammy should have been, like, the big one that was the focus here, but we have to see where this ultimately goes. And if there's a purpose for it with Rollins, like, I would think, like, that would be something coming out of Survivor Series if that's the case.
Could be. Yeah, very, very well could be. Anytime somebody says, I'm never going to team with this person again, you know that they're going to team together again. So, yeah, Rollins is a candidate, you know. Braun is a candidate for the other side, too. If they simply want to give that, like, high-profile spot to somebody who's up and coming, I think Braun would certainly fill the role. I'm still, like, hedging my bets on Cody and KO, though, just because those two seem to be in conflict, and because KO has so much reason to want to be in a War Games with a Roman Reigns, and Cody is already so well established with the group anyway. Let's go to Jermaine from Chicago, who says, I got to watch Raw because of Veterans Day. Thought it was good, but not great. CM Punk and McIntyre add a lot of star power to the show. It felt like the show lacked some juice. Some things I want to point out. Should WWE explain why these guys and girls can go back and forth shows like it's nothing? Should they?
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't really care at this point.
Building interpromotional. The two big War Games matches are interpromotional. So, I mean, like, that's why.
All they've really explained in the past is just, like, you know, Pierce and all this having some form of agreement. Like, that's kind of all they need to say. It's fine. Some things I want to... okay, what else? Should Bronson Reed have a manager because of that accent? No disrespect. Takes the illusion that he's a tough guy for me. Okay, that just sounds dumb. do you not know of... what's that dude's name?
The best promos...
Crocodile Dundee, okay?
Wasn't that the
Paul
exact
Hogan?
Wasn't that the exact stereotype?
He sounds tough. Well,
I had no issue with Bronson's promo. It was fine.
Yeah, that just sounds dumb. Okay. I don't want to read the rest.
Okay. Well, there you go. Thank you, Jermaine.
It's
always.
Just that we got too much stuff.
Alexander from Portland. Fun show tonight. Great to see so many characters and storylines woven together. This is the first of the recent two-hour episodes that I've seen, and it flew by so fast. Seth and Sammy were fantastic. EO feels bigger, and seeing Dakota return was welcoming. My favorite part of the night was The Miz and the crowd chanting, Miz, you suck. I genuinely thought Miz might have been written to turn babyface and get far away from the Wyatt 6 Final Testament feud. If there's ever a good way to turn babyface, it's to say how much you want to get away from the Final Testament.
Well, yeah, he got closer.
He's embedded in the Final Testament, okay?
Yeah. All right, let's go to Muggin, who says, personally, I hope Cody sits out of the match beyond as he's got his own issues with Owens. Seth having his reasons for not wanting to stand on Roman's side is logical, and with Sammy running with the OG bloodline again, it's not gone over well with the locker room. Maybe Heyman calls in a favor in the 11th hour for a former client who Reigns has deemed off-limits many months ago, CM Punk. What do you think of that?
I would be very surprised not to have CM Punk in some featured role on the show. It's a very big show. They have to you have to tie up Cody with something, because that is this lingering loose end that there needs to be an explanation for why he would not be that guy. And whether it means he's preoccupied with Randy and he somehow that ties him to Kevin Owens. I mean, you need to make a reason that Cody is not the logical one, because we just saw him working with Roman Reigns and that they were like the superpowers. And now we're pretending this guy has no relationship to the bloodline and would be the first person that Roman would probably extend the invite to.
Yeah.
So just explain that on SmackDown and then go crazy with your fifth man mystery. And maybe it ends up being Cody.
All right, let's go. Your turn.
Oh, yeah. Last one here is Ani, who writes, I really like Muggin's suggestion that Punk could be the fifth man. This could serve as a device to build a Reigns-Punk match down the line. Not been thrilled by Raw, once my favorite weekly show, since the move to 2 hours. Punk and Drew have been huge misses, and the once vibrant mid-card scene has stagnated. Really need Braun to get this IC title moving with a good outing against Sheamus. You know, I feel the I think the show has definitely been, you have seen that after that lead up with Drew and Punk and their absence from the show. And that does leave a hole on Raw, even with the change to the 2 hour format where the show moves. But you are missing, I would argue, the two biggest stars on the show, especially of the last 6 months.
Having this Bloodline story kind of crossover between the two shows, I think, has certainly helped. But yeah, like, this show has been really missing Punk and Drew. So we'll see if they return in time for Survivor Series.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap up the show. So thanks to everyone for joining us tonight. And you can always support Post Wrestling over at postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 a month. It gives you 30 days access right out of the gate, access to all of our archives and multiple bonus shows per week. 4 coming your way this week, including Rewind Away on Thursday. Brandon from New Jersey will sit in with us and we will force him to discuss Death Warrior, featuring Quentin Jackson, Rashad Evans, George St. Pierre, and Keith Jardine, with cameos by Mauro Ranallo and John Ramdeen.
That's right. What an all-star cast. I'm looking forward to it. Most of all, talking to Brandon from New Jersey for the whole show.
Yes, yes. We're making him sit through this entire one. And this month, you can take a look at what is coming up. We will have New Japan reviews of Historic Crossover 2 in a couple of weeks. Wei and I will also do a Rewind Away covering TNA Turning Point 2009 later on this month, featuring the rematch between AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, and Christopher Daniels. And we will get in the final Ask Away mailbag show of the year. So if you want to get your questions in, the last chance to do so this year, you can go to forum.postwrestling.com, submit your questions, and that will be coming out later this month in November. So there you have it, everyone.
And these shows ad-free. All the shows that John and I appear on this feed, get them ad-free in the Post Wrestling Cafe.
All right. We'll speak with you later on this week. Goodbye.
I was running until I wasn't. My hospital stay would have cost nearly $48,000, even with insurance. But with VA, I'll pay zero. And VA is the best, most affordable healthcare in America for veterans like me. Knowing that my family is waiting at home and a surprise medical bill isn't, that's good for my heart. My service was then, my benefits are now. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.